happening, my debt-free millionaire zealots? Hey, this is Zach Edwards for another episode of the Debt-Free Millionaire Podcast and the Personal Finance Course. That's right. So we are teaching you about finances. Right now, we're talking about houses. This whole week has been about houses. I think tomorrow is actually about transportation. But we're going to do one more day of everything that people want to hear about. And this is houses, real estate, making money. Now, this house is the one that you actually live in. But we're going to make sure that it's going to be a house that you can earn at least $100,000 if you move out about 2 years later. That's right. So now, not guaranteed, because you never know what happens with the market. You never know what happens with the home. But almost guaranteed, if you follow these steps, you will actually walk away with $100,000 on top of what you paid for any house. And this is where a house becomes an investment. This is where the Robert Kiyosaki way is not the way that we're going to teach you, because we're going to teach you how to make your house an investment. And this is also somewhat similar to the Dave Ramsey way, except you don't have to pay off all your debt, though you should get rid of most, if not all, your debt before you buy into this. And this is why. This is what we're going to get into. So let's kick this into the... Let's see. I'm going to bring this up. So the point of this episode is to make sure that you actually know that if you buy a house and are intentional, again, the word that we love to stress, and this might be the theme of our whole podcast, is intention. We want you to be intentional in all that you do. We want you to have self-reliance. We want you to be resist temptation and to be intentional in the things that you do, which will actually make you debt-free and make you a millionaire and together debt-free millionaire. Okay. So let's go through this. So every house that you buy should be able to make you about $100,000 if you do it correctly. And the reason why I say if you do it correctly is because we're actually going to teach you the step-by-step steps in order to get to $100,000 in your home. Okay, so first off, there are many different steps, and we're going to go through each of them. But the first thing you want to do is buy in an area that is just about to take off. Now, I told you my story 3 days ago, where basically I bought into a location. I didn't actually know, this was not intentional, and it should have been intentional. I didn't know what was happening in the city when I bought the house. Come to find out, the city was actually paying all the businesses with storefronts to upgrade and beautify their storefronts. By doing that, they actually brought up the value of the whole city. The whole city was boosted from this one decision. All the storefronts became somewhat unified. They were not all unified, but they're somewhat unified. We got a new movie theater to move into the area. That was thanks to the city. We have a new, it's a, not a strip mall. It's a large outlet type mall, outside mall that has everything from sports equipment to Five Below to different restaurants. Actually, when it first came up, there were no restaurants. We're like, people are not going to come to this place on a normal basis, unless you have stuff like, if they're going to put in a restaurant, then you'll have multiple people coming every day. So that will keep it busy. The theater is actually on the other side of the road. It's not behind it, but it will bring people into the area. Another one that's really good is if you can get a gym in that area. So restaurants and gyms, those are the two big ones to get repeat buyers to come back, because those are always full. Because people pay memberships or for food, everyone goes and gets food. I mean, if you're intentional, you won't be getting as much outside food than you would have in your house. But that's for something else, another conversation. But if you can buy in a place that's going to be increasing the value of their area, then you know exactly that's where you want to buy. If you buy into a place that is dropping in popularity, crime's going up, place is getting dirtier, you're going to lose money in that house. The possibility is you will lose money. The value of the house will not increase as much as you're going to be paying into it. But if you find a location that is boosting everything, like the city actually cares about what's going on in their city, and they're getting rid of crime, and they're cleaning up, and they're doing things that make it more beautiful to be at. This was the town that I moved into recently, and I bought a house, and I doubled the money, over $100,000, doubled the money in less than, I think we were there for 4 years. But in 2 years, I could have actually sold it for fairly close to double, more like $70,000, but I also saved a ton on the backside. There's other things we're going to be going over. But just from what the city did, it doubled the price of the houses in 4 years. So I told you 2 years, but 2 to 4 years, you should be able to get at least $100,000 out of your house. Now, the houses that were valued at like $200,000 to $300,000, they only received probably like a $100,000 jump or a $50,000 jump. The house that I purchased after that house, after I sold that house, I walked away with $200,000 I could put into my next house. And so I put in $200,000 into the house that I'm at right now. It was a distressed house also. So this actually brings up the second one. If you're handy at all, or actually maybe I shouldn't say at all, if you're handy, you might want to think about getting a distressed house. This is why going into a trade is not a bad decision. It's actually probably just as smart as becoming a doctor if you like doing that type of work, because that will make you more money than a doctor when they come out 11 years later from school, when you only have about a year's worth of school. So you have 10 years to make up the difference. And whether you're earning $150,000 in your day job, or you're making $50,000 and $100,000 in your investments, that's for you to work on. Okay, so I took three houses. The one in Alaska was distressed. I sold that one, bought the one in Missouri, sold that one, put all that money into the next house, and that house has now increased in value by, from what we paid for it, over $160,000 in 2 years, because I bought a distressed house and I bought it in a location that, again, was still beautifying. So the value of houses have skyrocketed. Plus, we're in a great market, which I'll talk about in a minute. But this is where, sorry, I forgot the first image that I was going to bring up. So we're trying to get into a nice home. So if you're handy, then this is the way to get into a good house. Now, some of the things that you can do on your own, if you can learn how to do flooring, that's a big one, because you're not paying someone else to do the flooring, and you can do something that you pay $10,000 for a few, maybe $200 to $500, depending on what kind of flooring you're putting in. If you can do flooring, you're in a great spot. Paint. If you're willing to paint your walls, they're going to be, when you walk into a distressed house, a lot of them are dingy. There are oils on the walls or smoke on the walls because the person smoked before. You can get rid of all that with a really good coat of paint. You want to kill it first with primer, because that will kill everything that's on the wall, and scrub it down too. If it's grease or anything like that, you want to scrub it down, but then kills it and then put paint on it, and you can actually increase the value right there. Just that one thing, painting the interior of the house, possibly the exterior, by $10,000 to $20,000, which the person before could have gotten it, but most likely if you're buying a distressed house, a lot of times you're buying a foreclosure house, which means that the person has no choice. They just move out and the bank sells it for less money than it was actually worth because they want to get rid of it. The big thing that you want to know though, and this is why I said last time, you need to have an inspector and or a handyman, and both of them, if you can help it, because you want them to be able to come through and you want to have as many eyes as possible to find every issue that's wrong with the house. An inspector is going to go through, they're certified to be able to find nearly everything. The handyman will find other things that they see because they're on two different fields. Handyman is in houses every day doing this every day. The inspector is inspecting houses every day doing this every day. So they're hopefully going to be able to see, to let you know if this house has good bones. Bones is the most important part to understand. Bones is the structure of the house. The foundation is good. The walls are good. There are no termites in the walls. That makes the bones very bad and very brittle, and you're going to have a lot more issues there. But if you can find a house that people think may be distressed more than normal, if you learn how to fix and you are intentional in what you have to do, you will actually save a ton of money, and that will be put into what's called sweat equity. This is basically equity in the house that was built off your sweat. And so even though you put your time in and you spent 100, even 1,000 hours, and you might have been able to make a ton of money on the side, this is basically tax-free. The government can't tax you on the increase in your house up to a certain point, and we'll go over that later on. But the one thing you want to know is if you can put the time and effort into this, you will actually be able to make a ton of money. And the more trades you understand and know how to do, the better. Flooring, if you know electrical, great, because I won't touch electrical in my houses. Plumbing, if you know plumbing, there's going to be a lot of expenses that you're going to be able to bypass because you're not paying someone else. You can do it yourself. If you know carpentry, that's a great one to get into. All of these are amazing. Now, things like drywall, you probably won't find a job if you're American born because immigration has actually taken over that part of the industry. And there's other ones as well that they've taken over. Learn the trades that you can do and learn the trades that they do because you might not have to pay someone that does drywall. You can do it yourself. You probably won't go to work doing drywall, but you can at least learn the trade. Learn how to install sheetrock, how to mud, how to tape. Doing all these things to make your house look amazing without having to get extra help to do it as well. Okay, so good bones. That's the major part. If you buy a distressed house, most likely you're going to have about $20,000 to $50,000 worth of equity right up front as soon as you fix it. Other things to look for. If you find a good foundation guy or girl or woman, you will actually find that you can buy houses that are stressed and everyone sees the cracks in the foundation, bring them in. Ask them how much it's going to cost to get this fixed. And you're going to get a big savings because a lot of banks that find these foundation issues are going to try to offload their houses as fast as possible because that's a big issue for them and they might not be able to sell it. But if you can get someone to fix it, again, like I had someone come in and fix it, and again, they warranted it, so they're coming back. That's great. Okay, the next thing to do, you don't have to buy a huge house. You're going to be what they call house poor. If you buy a big house, you won't be able to afford furniture, but you also won't be able to afford fixing it up. Start off small. My first house was a one-story, 1,200 square foot. I then moved into a 2,000 square foot, and I'm now in a 3,000 square foot house because I worked my way up the scale. And as you do that, you can spend a smaller amount of money because the next part is very important. When you're doing this, well, okay, it's two down the line. You want to be able to, or three down the line, you're going to be able to pay a small down payment. And that down payment needs to be 20% of the house value. But we'll get into that in just a minute. Okay, so very, very important. When I left Alaska, I had $100,000 worth of equity in the house because I found a distressed house and I bought a smaller house and I upgraded into a fully paid for house, which was bigger than the one I got in Alaska. Again, I moved from Alaska, which is houses cost a lot there, to Missouri, where a house did not cost a lot there. Prices have increased, sadly. They've increased dramatically, so much that when you could have bought a house for under $100,000, bought a first-time house, you now can only buy a first-time house at around $200,000. So that's increased as well. You can actually find some that are lower, but just so you know, that is a very important part of buying houses. Okay, so next, the question is, how do we get to this? This is the house that I see that all of you guys really want to get it to, or some of you may actually want to get to, where you have a big piece of land, like a lap swimming pool. Oh, that's really nice. Multiple cars. You've got where's their garage? I mean, there's a carport here. You probably want a garage too. But yeah, so something like that. That'd be great to have, right? But start small and get bigger as you come. So, okay. Next off is don't buy at peak. So peak is one of the biggest things that we have an issue with. We, as humans, we want to buy at any time whenever it's available to buy a house. But if we buy it here, the value of the house is pretty high. Yeah, it's great. It's going to keep going up, right? No, actually, it's going to tank and it's going to go down. So when the market went down, it was 2007, so I was right here thinking that the market was going to continue to go up, because I didn't know anything about the economy and how it all ran. So right here is where I bought my first house in Colorado. And as you can see, it started to tank. So then I lost that job and I moved over to Salt Lake City, Utah. And I bought another house again at peak. And what happened? It just continued to tank. The house in Colorado went under about $20,000.
The house in Utah went down $50,000. I lost $50,000 in value in the house. Biggest mistake in my life was, well, one of the biggest mistakes in my life was buying at peak, because all I did was lose all that equity. So if you can buy at this place and sell at this place, there's $100,000 just in that difference. So if I renovated a house, I would have been increased my value by $50,000 to $100,000 because I bought distressed. If I bought at the bare bottom or even somewhere in the middle, I would have added another, what, $50,000. If I was at 210 and went up to 260, and that was over, what, about 4 years. So 4 years seems to be a nice sweet spot. Now, sometimes it goes at 2 years, sometimes it goes at 4 years, and sometimes it goes at 6 years. But again, you can actually make $100,000 on any house that you buy by doing it intentionally. Now, if the next one is very important, I'm going to get to that in just a second. This is something that I really need to stress. Every market, every time there's a recession in the market, there's usually a valley, and about 10 years later, there is a peak, and then it will tank. So think of that. Find where the bottom is, the very bottom, and go out from there about 10 years, and that's where your peak is going to be, and that's where it's going to drop. The possibilities it's going to drop. Now, the difference in this one is this is 2019. It actually continued to go up until about 2022. Yes. In about 2022 is when it started to drop again. Now, values have dropped, and in order to sell your house, you have to actually drop the price from what it could have been. Not of how much you bought it, but how much it could have been. So look at that. Keep in mind the market. The market is about 10 years from 1999 up to about 2026. And it was actually lower. It started down here because the lowest, the valley, was actually a few years before 99. But then it peaked and then it came down. And when I say 10 years also, from the actual peak to the actual, or from the bottom to the actual peak, is about 10 years because there is a plateau and then that's when it tanks. So right now we've hit a plateau and it's tanked a little bit, but there's a possibility it could tank even more under the current administration. Trump comes in, who knows? It might go up, it might stay steady. No one really knows. We do know that in this market, inflation is going up, interest rates are going up, and we're not buying houses. So the value is going down. But there's also another thing that's different in this market than there is in this market. This market, there were like every builder had an extra 40 to 50 different houses on the market ready to sell, and it was oversaturated, which means there was too many houses for little buyers. Now, the reason why it hasn't tanked as much as it has is because the buyers got smart and they're only building what they need to in order to fulfill their contracts and sell a few on the side. The biggest thing is they want to get contracts at the beginning and then build the house, the custom houses, for the people that are going to buy them. And the reason why they're doing this is because then they don't lose money by having a ton on the market and they can't sell it, much like what happened in this market here. So that's a little bit different. If you see that there's an oversaturated of houses, if there's so many houses, only a little bit of buyers, you know that's going to create a recession like this one. This is the housing recession that happened here. This is more of an economic recession, where again, the builders were smart, so they didn't make a ton of houses. And when they had to sell them, they didn't have money to sell or to sit on the market not being sold. So they didn't have to drop their prices too much. So this is all things to understand as you're buying a house. Buy at the valley, sell at the peak. That is something big to understand. The next one is also very important, but it's not as important as all these other ones. But if you're gonna sell the house every 4 years, the biggest expenses that you can get around is this. That's right, your utilities, your appliances, including your kitchen appliances, but mostly your furnace, that's like 10 grand right there, 10 to 20 grand. Your AC unit, that's like 10 grand there. Your hot water heater, that's like 3 grand there. So this is a lot of expenses that you don't have to worry about, and you can push it off to the next buyer. Not being unethical, you're gonna use that furnace up and they're gonna use that furnace as well. You're not going to sell them a broken furnace. They won't accept that. Everyone goes into buying a house with eyes wide open as much as possible. And so when somebody comes through, they're going to have an inspector that says, that's a really old furnace. It should be replaced. And you may have to pay for that in your closing. But you can also negotiate it and say, we're not paying for the furnace. If you want the house, because the market is in your favor, that's what they call a buyer's market, which means the buyer has all the strength and the seller is just trying to get rid of their house. This one is actually more of like both. The buyer, the seller wants to get rid of their house because the market's having an issue. But the seller has strength because there's not many houses on the market. So there's all these different reasons to live in a house for 4 years and then sell it up. Sell the house, get into another house. Hopefully, if you bought a house with really good appliances or you got them replaced before you moved in because of the when you're negotiating sales, then you might actually have a appliance that will not kink out at you, will not go poop, and it's done. And then you have to pay an extra $10,000, $20,000, or even $30,000 to replace it. So this is very important to understand and something that I will continue to stress upon. Buying a house with newer appliances is always a great way of going forward, especially if they're distressed houses. But the best values is if you have to replace them. If you do replace them, make sure you replace them up front. If like they're broken or have issues, make sure you replace them because you get more energy efficient ones. And when you do sell, you're going to sell for a better value. But bring someone in to look at it before you buy the house so that you know. Okay, and I said I was going to get to this. This is the next point. This is a very important part. And this is your mortgage. Now, you don't want to buy a house with only 5% down or 10% down just because you can get into a house. Why is that? It's because you're paying what we call PMI. This is the private mortgage insurance. This is basically the mortgage company saying, I want to ensure that you're going to pay this bill. So I'm going to have an insurance policy on you and you're going to pay it. You, the buyer, is going to pay that $100 a month extra just to make sure that you're going to pay up the mortgage, pay your mortgage every month. Now, if your house is at 80% value, if like you bought the house at 80% of what the actual value is, you can actually get rid of your PMI. But you cannot buy a house and say, hey, there's about $20,000 equity already in the house. You can't do that. The mortgage company will not accept that. What they will accept is if you go in and say, okay, I'm going to buy this house. You buy the house, not at 20%. You fix it up and then you increase the value of the house by 20%. If you increase that value, you can get a new appraiser to come in. And if they see that there's 80% equity in the house, or sorry, 20% equity in the house, then the mortgage company will actually allow you to get rid of your PMI, but it has to be approved by an appraiser and then the company, which means more money, more time. You're already paying the PMI from the beginning. So if you can actually raise enough in your savings to put 20% down in the house, you're going to be in a better situation than doing it the opposite way, because you're not going to pay that extra $100 a month. You can actually buy $100 more of a house at that point. And you can also put that money towards fixing up the house so that when you do sell it, it's $100,000 more value than just $50,000 more value. And you didn't have to pay all that money towards the PMI. Very important thing to understand. You do not want to rush into getting a house. A house is not something to rush into just because there's opportunity, or just because you have a baby on the way, or just because of all the wonderful things she does. Oh, sorry, that's a song. Anyways, that is something to understand when you are getting into a house. So a mortgage is something that you really want to be intentional on, getting it when you have the savings to pay 20% down and don't have to pay that PMI. Again, that $100 a month does add up. So if you can buy a house and pay off your mortgage, that's even better. So I'll tell you why that's even better. In a lifetime of 30 years, if you lived in a house for 30 years, you're paying double what the house is worth in your mortgage. So paying that money in a mortgage is more expensive. You're basically paying someone else almost double what the house is worth just to live in the house. which is where a house is no longer an investment. It is a liability. So there's investments and there's liabilities. This is a liability if you are not intentional in these ways that I'm talking about, and more. You're going to get that in the book and such. But another thing to understand is if you pay off your mortgage, you're not paying the PMI. You're not paying for all these small little fees that the mortgage company puts in there. And you're not paying the interest, which again, your interest is huge at the beginning and very small at the end. So if you pay down your house, at least pay down your house, maybe not get rid of your mortgage, pay down your house, your interest becomes very small. And you can still claim, I have a mortgage and I have this amount of money left in my bank account that I can put in other investments. That's fine too. That's a way of doing it. But if you get rid of that payment, that's 30 years, I'm not worrying about a mortgage. I'm sitting free and clear in a house where I don't have a mortgage. How sweet is that? I don't have a mortgage. I don't have to worry about every month paying that mortgage. I still have to pay other bills. I have to pay all my utilities every month. I have to pay my any kind of loan that I have. Hopefully, we're going to get you out of those loans. And you're just down to your monthly expenses. And those you control. The other ones you don't control. So again, we're going to make you intentional and stronger than ever financially. Okay, so here's ways of paying off your house faster. We're going to go through these fairly quickly because we're about out of time. First, you want to pay your mortgage off faster by not just paying the monthly amount, but paying an extra amount. So say you're paying, let's just give normal numbers. You're paying $1,000 to your house, your mortgage every month. Okay, so you have $1,000 that you're paying and you have like an extra $1,000 in your bank account. Did you know that by paying that extra $1,000, doubling the amount that you're paying, you're actually paying your house off a lot faster? You're almost getting down to a 15% loan. Some people like saying, oh, I want to get a 15-year loan. Most loans are 30%. If you can get a 15% loan or 15-year loan, that's great. It basically forces you to pay faster. But you don't have to if you pay a 15% loan amount while having a 30-year loan in the record. Basically, that you're going to be paying it off for 30 years. You pay it off faster. You add on more that you're paying towards your principal every month. Now, in the check that you write for this extra amount, make sure that you write in the subject line, principal only. If the mortgage company says, oh, we're paying that towards your interest, you can say, I'm going to sue you because I put in there, and maybe it's even better if you put in a letter and say, I want this putting towards my principal and not my interest. You're going to pay off your mortgage a lot faster. And a threat of a lawsuit for them not following what you wrote them, they are working for you. You're not working for them. They are still working for you, even though you're paying them. They actually are legally obligated to put that money towards principal if you ask them to do that. So tell them to do that. Then you could pay basically a 30-year loan in a 15-year amount of time. And you don't have to worry about, oh, this month I can't afford the what would have been my 15-year loan, but I can afford my 30-year loan. So it's just different ways of doing it. Another way of paying off your houses quickly is, again, buying a distressed house. I say buying a distressed house, and you're going to have to put some sweat equity into it. But think of it this way. I paid $100,000 for a $200,000 house, but I have to put $50,000 into fixing it. So over as fast as possible, I try to make all those fixes. Whether I do them myself or I get other people to bring people in, I have a full-time job. I can pay them over time, but my mortgage does not go up. So my mortgage stays at $100,000 that I owe, and I'm paying on that $100,000. All this other stuff is being paid with the money that comes in monthly. So paying off your $100,000 is going to be a lot faster than paying $150,000 for everything, or even $200,000. Now, some people would like to say that you need to get your equity out of your house, refinance it, and take that money and put it into an investment. You can do that. That is the Robert Kiyosaki way. You can take that money out in equity and put it towards a business of investment properties. That is one way of doing it. But you're going to have to worry about if you're going to lose your own house if you can't pay your monthly mortgage. say your rental houses, a recession happens or a epidemic happens, and all of a sudden the U.S. government says, oh, the renters do not have to pay. Yeah, you don't think that might happen, but they did that the last time. When the COVID virus came through, they actually put a cap and actually a limitation that the renters did not actually have to pay every month, because you couldn't kick them out of your house at that time. So what would happen? They're not paying their mortgage. What's happening to you? You can't pay your mortgage. They're not paying your mortgage because they're not paying your rent. You can't pay your mortgage. And so what happens is you lose your rental properties, and then you lose your house because you have no income coming in. This is why it's essential to pay off your house. Do not take equity out of your own house to buy an investment, because basically you're gambling with that money. And guess what happens with gambling? The house always wins, meaning the casinos always win. Also, the mortgage companies always win. They always get paid. Whether they're going to take your house and sell it, they're always going to get paid. And that's why they have a mortgage insurance, just in case you don't pay up. So they make their money back. They always make their money back. That's the house. Okay, the next thing to do, again, like I said, is buy at the bottom and sell at the peak. So let's go on to the next. Buy at the bottom, right here, or right here, and sell at the peak, up here or up here. In that place, if you sell your house every 4 years and it's increasing in value, look at that. You're going to get a better house as a distressed house, and then you're going to sell it again at peak, and you're going to get all your money out of it, and you're going to walk into a house with no mortgage. How great would that be? I'll tell you what. It is great. I've been this way since I moved here almost 9 years ago in Missouri. 9 years, no mortgage. Would I ever go back? Heck no. If I can control it, I will never go back to paying a mortgage. And I want to get you to that place, because you deserve not to have a mortgage if you're intentional. If you follow these steps, you will actually make it there. You will become debt-free. And because you're debt-free and you're going to be able to put your money, all of the stuff you'd be putting into your debt, into investments, you'll be a debt-free millionaire. This is how you become a debt-free millionaire, is by being intentional with your life and your finances. When it comes to budget, you want to be able to have know exactly where your money's going, every single bit of it. And if there's extra, put into savings, put into investments, put into savings for investments when you have enough to put into investment. There's all these different things. Real estate is not the only way of making money. We will walk you through all the steps of ways to make money. The way that the gurus sell you on, the way that they make $10,000 to $20,000 from you just to go to their workshops and their seminars. And guess what? You get it for free here on the Debt-Free Millionaire Podcast. How great is that? So if I haven't made you a debt-free millionaire zealot, stick around. I know I will, because there's so much more to come. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time. Bye.